Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. We finally got in. We've had a little technical difficulty tonight. Everyone's been having trouble calling in to the Blog Talk Radio phone system and finally got in there. I saw our first guest on the switchboard just a moment ago, and she apparently dropped back off. So, Doug, do you have a live mic now? I do believe you and Red both have live mics, if you'll say hello.
Yes, hello. This is Doug Millar.
Yeah, this is Red Beckman. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Red. Here's our guest coming back in. Dorothy, you should have a live mic now, but we haven't. We've all had trouble calling in, and I saw you all come up on the board earlier, and I gave you a live mic, but you had no way to know it. So, any rate, Red, open us with a prayer, please. We need it.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Heavenly Father, we thank you for making this available. Help us to get around these problems and such and do what we need to do. And we pray that the guest tonight and the subject will be well received and a needed message. We, the people of this country, have been so deprived of truth. Truth has been a scarce commodity. And we hope to be able to change that and change as much as we can. And we can do that if we have your help. We can't do it of ourselves, but with your help, we can make it happen. So we ask that you bless what is said and done here tonight and make it so that the right people that need this kind of message are listening in, and we'll give you the praise now for everything in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.
Well, Dorothy, is that you there?
It is. Can you hear me?
Oh, wow. Yes, we hear you. You know, Dorothy, I got a feeling it might be because you're on the show tonight we're having all these technical difficulties. You think that's a possibility?
Oh, I'll let my laugh tell you the answer.
Yeah, it's not unusual for you, is it?
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you what, we finally got BTR, Blog Talk Radio, to drop their HD format a couple weeks ago. Andrea Shea King had pulled her show because of the difficulties, and since they got rid of that system, we've been pretty stable. And this is the first technical difficulty we've had now in a couple of weeks. So we've been pretty blessed so far, and hopefully now we won't have any more for the rest of the show. I'm just going to turn the floor over to you and pray that our system stays afloat here. We've had Dr. Karen Roof on here a few months ago, Dorothy, and she was telling us about the dangers of the children with the Wi-Fi systems in the schools, and also some of the retinal recognition from the computers and iPads and things that they were able to literally do some things digitally and electronically with the kids, as identifying their moods and all of this sort of thing. It was a pretty scary stuff we talked about, and today that's talking about this geospatial intelligence and a new information on the Jade Helm, what they call Jade 2, where they've got this artificial intelligence software, or they're doing artificial telepathy. And I think it's been an interesting time in recent years, in recent months, but this is just getting beyond scary anymore. And I think it's really apropos that we've got you on this evening that can give us some information and help our listeners understand a little bit about what's going on. And really, I hope people are listening that have some kids and understand the dangers that they're facing. So you have the floor, Dorothy. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Gentlemen, feel free that as I'm chatting about some of this stuff to make some notes, and if you want to ask some questions of things I talk about, feel free, okay? That way it feels more like a conversation, kind of like a fireside chat conversation rather than a lecture of sorts. Quite frankly, let me give you a little bit of background of my history so that you have a slight bit of clue as far as what background I bring to the show. And I'm kind of going to go backwards just because I think it may assist. I was the lead planner in the largest anti-terrorist exercise for the state of Arizona between 2005 and 2007. Every 2 years, there are exercises that go on, and they are international. So multiple countries are involved. 150 federal agencies were involved. But I was the lead planner, simply meaning that we put together various types of exercises, as in simulated disasters, so that people who are supposed to be the boots on the ground know how to play. Now, in the one that I was involved in, the people who were actually the boots on the ground really weren't supposed to be playing because they commonly know what they have to do. The one that I was involved with dealt with the senior-most leaders of the states that were involved, the nations that were involved, and Washington, D.C., leadership up and to include the President of the United States. Prior to that, I worked for FEMA, where I was involved shortly after Hurricane Katrina. I was in Mississippi at the headquarters. I saw a great deal of things there. I was a planner and also led the planning team in the office for a short period of time after I'd been adequately trained. Prior to that, I worked in the finance, software, and banking industries dealing with Y2K, year 2000, which was a digital laydown of a lot of what we're now seeing. The reason why that's important for people to begin looking at the difference between analog, which was almost like a snapshot, picture to picture, when you used to have the old films, and you would see actually the different snapshot on the microfiche. You could commonly see those if you go to a library. That was analog. Digital means it's streaming. It's like a stream that it keeps running. And even, for instance, when you put your hand into a stream, the water still flows over it. The difficulty with streaming is that they can change anything in streaming and make it look like it's an authentic piece of material or evidence. So for anyone who may be listening, please get your children's or grandchildren, or even your medical records, financial records. Review them often to make sure they're accurate, because information can be easily changed in any area. You do not use debit cards. If you are not, if you have a credit card, use a credit card. It's higher level of protection. Pay it off at the end of the month. Do not get into major debt. Again, these are There's a lot of stuff that's going on. Do not do online banking. And please know, I know our subject may be the focus of children, but these are helpful hints given what I was witnessing and seeing throughout these different careers. I worked with defense contracts for a time period in which I saved money, but prior to that I was in the United States military for nearly 9 years. I left because of lack of ethics at the highest level. I could no longer participate. I was a commander, meaning I had legal authority. I have 3 advanced degrees. I'm an ordained minister. I have a secondary master's in federal contract negotiation and administration, which means that I was, while in the military, a negotiator on aircraft parts and pieces and upgrades. I was asked to give away the money, and I refused because my job description said that I was supposed to negotiate for the fair and best price for all taxpayers. My parents raised me that way. And so I was repeatedly ordered to give away the money and sign my name. I told an officer who was of my same rank that if she wanted me to do that, I would do that only after she changed my job description and signed her name, telling me that she wanted me to give away American taxpayer money. When I was in the military as an officer and a commander, I did many things, from set up evacuation plans for families and children. I was in virtually during 4 wars, the Cold War, the secret war of Charlie Wilson in Afghanistan, and yes, there was a secret war that America was involved in, and that was in the 80s. It's actually made a movie. Please reference that movie because it's very important historically. The other was the first Gulf War. And then there was actually another select war that was going on that probably most people don't know about. And that was a war that dealt with the torture of many selected individuals within our military services. That also included the drugging, and it was not just rape, but also sexual slavery. And I know that as difficult as that is to hear, please know it is equally as egregious and difficult to say, yet live through. I was married. My marriage was intentionally destroyed, as were many of the victims who had these situations happen to them. For 23 years, I've dealt with nothing but brutal abuse in the VA, Veterans Administration system. Again, I do know that there are good individuals that work in those systems. I truly do believe that the current VA secretary is one of the best, most honorable people. I have not met him, but I have seen more movement in trying to help all veterans equally than any time before. And yet I still deal with threats against my life and those against my family and friends. I've been repeatedly brutalized in jobs, even after leaving the military. And I was, quite frankly, denied the right to recover from my abuse. And in 1999, I had met an amazing gentleman in 1995. I was pretty much terrorized to be around him, despite the fact he was in a wheelchair. But he was a good and decent man, salt of the earth, as they say. And when I became aware after almost 4 years of being around him and realizing that he was going to wait until I had gone far enough and he was encouraging me to speak out, they found him dead in his house, and I was threatened with my life that if I talk about what was really going on in the military, that I would be next. So having said that, in various jobs that I have even gotten. And my undergrad, let me go on and tell you, I got an advanced degree in public administration, graduating summa cum laude, almost a 4.0, while in Europe, in Germany specifically. I have an undergraduate in political science and criminal justice. So criminal justice being law enforcement, the evidence that you get with crimes, that you find with crimes, and then the application of those laws. Within the military, there is supposed to be an equal mirror image law book known as the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It is about holding people accountable. The problem is that it is a selective prosecution, as is the civilian law enforcement system is totally selective. Now, when I left the military because I could not participate, nor was I going to look the other way, as women and children, civilians, former military, as well as military women and selected men were being brutalized, and I was reporting it to the senior-most people available, going to the prosecutor of the base that was a full colonel, going to my bosses and trying to get above them, no one would help me. No one would stop the crimes. No one would stop anything. I would learn after taking a lawsuit against the last two men that repeatedly assaulted me. Now, this was not a sexual assault, but while I was in the military from 1981, and I consider my ROTC days in college as part of that because it really was sexual grooming and conditioning. And I had asked the cadre of the ROTC unit what was the accountability concerning sexual assault, and I was told, here's the UCMJ, and that was it. What I didn't know is there were actually eight laws of immunity. Eight laws of immunity that allowed for the criminal abuse of men, women, children, or anybody they wanted. I have lots of evidence to support this. 57 questions were put in play in 1970 in our military through the Pentagon that allowed for any type of criminal abuse of persons, enlisted, civilian, or any others, and no one would be held accountable. Over the years, I personally witnessed and reported these crimes, and again, no one was ever held accountable. It was not just military members who are participating. Sadly, some of their spouses and even their children were learning how to do this, these brutal abuses. If you want, you can go out and listen to Kathy O'Brien. There is also, you can listen on YouTube. You also have Arizona Wilder, Susan Ford. These women, none of us know each other. And again, I've never met any of them. I've talked briefly to Kathy O'Brien. And despite the fact that it's widely now known that her husband is what they call a handler is a person who keeps the person from talking too much, denying them the right to fully recover, and also limits their ability to really share what really happened and the simple level of this. Now, having said that, my belief system is that all children, it doesn't matter what age you are, when you were born whole. And that is the way we're supposed to be in our lives. There are, if you will, at least six different ways of traumatizing a child. And this goes back to the very beginning of any level of technology, radio, for instance. And I'll give you an example of this that many of you can probably simply look up on YouTube and you will find it if you are too young to know this. Those are sexual, psychological, physical, technological, educational, chemical, and spiritual. Every one of these are very important. Now, most people historically understand that radio was one of the greatest inventions that came on in this country, but very few people remember one of the most harrowing experiences on live radio that happened, and that was when Orson Welles had his story of the War of the Worlds. There were numerous people that would commit suicide believing that we were actually being invaded by Martians. Technology, no matter what time frame we are in, has a great deal of play. And when a child of any age has been physically, sexually, psychologically abused. Now, we're not just talking, and again, let's look at the parameters of, and this is something that I'm also suggesting that all parents and all people start paying attention to, is definitions. Because while you may have a set of definitions in your household of what you consider a lie or the truth, I can assure you that neighbors that you believe have the same definitions do not. There is actually an entire system that redefine words. And let me give you an example of this. If I were to say the word rose, what comes to mind? And when that comes to mind, stop. Rose is not just a color. It's not just a first name. It's not just a surname or last name. It is an adverb, a noun. You rose from a chair. The sun rose. It can be the color, rose color. It could be a bush, a flower. There are many different ways to describe that word, and depending on how you describe that word, the text around it changes. If you're with me still, the importance of words and definitions are absolutely important to understand. That when you even get into a contract, a school contract, a contract in your community, a contract in your church, when you enter into a contract, take it home and begin deciphering all the words. Not just the ones you believe and are reading it, but begin taking and tearing it apart. Because you will find that's another reason why these people who are manipulating, coercing, forcing, and corrupt, this is how they're getting away with it. Because the words even go back to some of the oldest text books. There's an 1800s, I want to say an 1872 dictionary. All these dictionaries are in play. If it's in the dictionary, it's a word that can be used in a contract. Do you know the contract that you have signed your child into when you let them go to school? Be very aware of what you are letting into your world, into your child's life. And this does take a bit of time to sit down and really begin looking at what is going on around us. When you discipline your children and you tell them no, N-O, is that the same as K-N-O-W, that you know what you're doing? Because to these people, K-N-O-W, that's how they're interpreting when I say the word N-O, no. And yes, it is a play on words, but this, think back to the last time you went to the voting booth, that when you began reading on just one issue, and yet it was circular reasoning, that when you were looking at a subject, and it was just one issue, I'm sure you can think of something, because I have, when I've looked at issues in a voting booth and it is on a passage of something, don't you find it amazing that often it will be written in such a way that if you vote no for it, you're still voting yes for it? And if you vote yes for it, they're actually still getting what they want anyway? Because this is what's going on. That's circular voting. That's circular reasoning that they're putting in there. It's being written so that they, those people who want that issue passed, are getting it passed. Now, coming back to your children and why this is important. We have a lot of laws, but the laws are not being held accountable. Crimes that we have witnessed as individuals. I actually, when I was in college, there were, you know, I was raised to believe that you were supposed to do what was right. And part of that is, especially, and again, pardon me, because it is not my intention to offend anyone in the way you believe. But one of the things I was raised with as a young Catholic, and again, please don't hold it against people that they're raised in a religion of their parents or grandparents, because those people often don't know some of the hidden things of any religion. From what I have seen, there are religions in which all people of all churches have been involved in criminal corruption towards others. So this is not about throwing a stone. It really is about revealing the truth, the problems, the issues, and how people are being used and abused, and to stop it. Because when I was growing up, I didn't care what religion someone was. If something was being done wrong to harm and to hurt them in any way, I stood up against it because that was the way I was raised. We were Americans first, our religions and our state second. Yet those in higher places obviously didn't have the same feeling. So what had occurred, and I'm going to give you some words, and again, you can look this up. There are words in, and this is an entirely separate language. They are called finders, conditioners, groomers, programmers. I also added to them traumatizers. These are individuals that can be both the finder, the groomer, the conditioner, the programmer. These are people who are in your community and have been in your community that are watching for your children. And they will then begin to traumatize their children. Now, when a child is born completely whole, and there is often, I'm going to give you some more language, so I hope you have your paper and your pencil with you. And please know I will try to be mindful and sharing with you if it is my definition or if it's me expanding part of the understanding. Often, as we grow up, we're told that when you give your permission, you're giving full consent. Well, that's a widely used term, but the problem with full consent is that it doesn't take into consideration those who are innocent and those who have been brutalized and shattered. So when a child has been abused, physically, sexually, psychologically, when I talk about technologically, I'm also talking about propaganda.
Roads are closed. Everything's blocked off. Why? I don't know.
Is everything okay, guys?
Go ahead, Dorothy. I've muted that line.
Okay. So one of the things I'm talking about is propaganda. And propaganda can come in through various types of music, various words in those music, or even beats, okay? It also has the ability to come in through television. This is not just flat screen TV, but even prior to that, go back again, if you have a computer, go back and go into YouTube if you have that availability, or even go to the library and get some of the old films, even if they're black and white, and begin looking at the different views, the different attitudes that were being shared. It's really quite remarkable when you begin to, and it may take a little bit of time. It's almost as if you're stepping out of your own understanding of what you were told was right and wrong, and then listening almost for a different pitch, if you will, a different meaning, a hidden meaning behind the words. It is also known that there is what they call a flicker rate in televisions, and that means it has subliminal. You will most often see this if you have somebody who has a camera and they are filming you and the TV is either behind you or even the computer is behind you. Now, it may have actually improved, but at least the larger screens, the ones that were more like TV screens not too long ago, they certainly had, to the human eye, when you simply looked at them, you couldn't tell the flicker rate. When they were on a camera and you had videotaped that computer screen when it was on, you could actually see almost like the flipping of the screen. And you could be sitting in the view finder, but to your eye you could not see the flicker, but you'd only see it through the camera lens. That tells you there is a flicker rate. Now, what that does to the mind is it begins to train it, both hypersensitize you or desensitize you to what's on it. They use colors, sounds, whistles. Here's some other words. And these are very important because they are what is known as neuro-linguistic programming. Neuro-linguistic programming is there are five components. They are keys, codes, triggers, tones, and hand signals. Keys, codes, triggers, tones, and hand signals. These words begin to think what a key is to you. It opens up or it locks, but what else? Begin to expand this, and I'm not really trying to give you too much about it, each one, because I don't want to taint your perception of them. If what these five do is they can either make you act or react emotionally, profoundly, in either a negative or a positive way. It has the ability, and this is based on where you were raised, how you were influenced, that you could have a negative reaction to a situation without knowing the facts, and immediately in your own mind go to the fact of saying a person is guilty without even knowing the facts. Now, if you think of who and what America is supposed to be about, that you're not supposed to be judged unless all the facts are there, are revealed. Now, let me go back to some of my college days and give you some information that unless you had these type of classes, you may not have known this. While in law enforcement classes, and I wanted to be an attorney and then run for U.S. Senate, and then who knows from there, but those were my goals. While in college, one of my professors let the class know, that at the time, and this is the 1980s, that mental health, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, those types. But they were involved in helping to pick juries. And now, if you think about that, and you begin to think back, if you're old enough to remember some of the movies that were about lawyers and justice and pollution and things like that that were coming out, that's in part what was really going on. They were actually using mental health people to pick juries. Ladies and gentlemen, that's called jury tampering. Attorneys are not allowed to psychologically profile the jury with the intention of being able to pick people who will convict based on your social, your economic, your religious background, or a whole lot of other things that they're doing. That's illegal. That's jury tampering, and they still do it. Now, here was another thing that this professor also let us know. He was telling us that they, attorneys, would, especially in rape cases. Now, we all understand, although it is very difficult to get mainstream America to fully accept that boys and or men can, in fact, and do and are rape victims. They do not warrant this, and neither do young women, young girls, or women of any age. The point of this is that in the 1980s, a college professor told us that the way that Americans had been socialized, specifically women, the way that we had been raised, that is why during that time period, these psychologists and psychiatrists helping defense attorneys of rapists would pick more women for rape cases, because women across America had been socialized to blame a victim rather than to believe that they were equally at risk of being raped themselves. That is a huge issue. Now, what is going on in America, and it is not covered by mainstream media, is that we are now in an epidemic issue of human trafficking in America. And it does not come from the victims who were raped as children, raped as young girls, who are being drugged and raped, the young boys who have also been drugged and raped, because there is an entire network of people doing this. These criminals see this as a business, ladies and gentlemen. This is all business to them. They do not care about the lives of these people. It is nothing but a business. You cannot go from a couple rapes to human trafficking in which there are billions of dollars. Now, why is this important to you? Because very early on, I shared with you that there were 57 questions in the 1970s, and I have, I believe, supplied them to Doug. I have no problems with supplying them to the host of this show. We will talk, and I will give him those 57 questions. He can share them with anyone who would like to see those. But within these questions, and I can give you some examples of those questions, the victim, and these were introduced into our military, across all our military services, and if a person had been assaulted, sexually assaulted, and they went to the equivalent of the FBI or the police and tried to hold accountable their assailant in the federal government, there was virtually a higher chance than not that they would almost certainly never get held accountable. the victim had to score below a zero, to be considered telling the truth. Now, just sit with that for a minute. Each question was between a half a point and 5 points each. And yet, the victim had to score below a zero to be considered telling the truth that they had been raped, assaulted, put in sexual slavery, that they had been drugged, that they had been brutalized. Now, this was introduced in 1970. And again, I'm going to give you just a few sample questions. I'm not reading it from the 57 questions, but these are questions, again, general review. I've read these questions enough that I know generally what they are. So here's just a few of them. If the victim told a friend first, he or she gets points. They lied about being raped. If they ask for a female doctor or a female investigator, let's say the victim is a female. So if she asks for a female doctor or a female investigator, she gets points. She's lying about being assaulted. If the assailant wore gloves, had a gun or a weapon, wore a mask, those are three different questions, they're lying. They were not assaulted. If they were taken to a different area and they can't describe it well, those are two different questions. They get points. They're lying. If they have any problem with any man, if they have any problem with finances, two different questions, they're lying, they were not assaulted. If they could not describe where they had been in detail, or if they were overly excited, or if they were actually under or somewhat flat, their voice was flat. Those are three different questions. Someone who's overly excited, that term can also be that they're frightened, that they are confused. If it is flat, their voice is flat and nondescript, that can also be shock and severe trauma. But it doesn't matter what you say, you are not going to score any points. And again, if you score any points as a victim in every one of these questions that I told you have a point associated to it, you must score below zero, or you're lying about being raped. Now, the reason why this is important is these 57 questions came out of the military. They were still in the military, still being used through the 1990s, through the 2000s. They've pretty much, they don't have to use the paper anymore because it's what they call, once you use them long enough, they pretty much become on-the-job training. But what now happens is those questions left the military. And in 1985, they showed up in the U.S. Congress concerning the rape of civilian children. And this was under the judiciary of our U.S. Senate, which was headed by then-Senator Byrd. There were two people who were the head of the subcommittee concerning the sexual abuse of children and the problem with it. This was, I want to say, April of 1985. I've got that testimony. I have read through it. The man who put together the United States Air Force's rape checklist, the 57 questions, Charles P. McDowell, testified before this committee. he acknowledged the FBI in supporting his work, these 57 questions. Now, please know, those 57 questions I have collaborated in other research, in totally separate information. It's actually in a book you can find. It's called For Love of Country. It actually collaborates, and this is by T.S. Nelson. There was actually a prosecutor who was in the training. Now, before I get ahead of myself, let me kind of go backwards. This testimony in Congress would legitimize those 57 questions, and they would then be taught across America to police officers and to attorneys who would go on to become judges. Now, these 57 questions are throwing out children's testimony of sexual assault and abuse. There is an organization called the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. Many of them are CIA doctors. Among their numbers includes a guy by the name of Paul McHugh. Paul McHugh, with Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who would go on to become Pope. When he was Pope, Paul McHugh came in from the head of the psychiatric department at Johns Hopkins University and is a member of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. Think of them as abuse deniers. Okay? Whatever kind of abuse you've been through, they're there to deny it ever happened. And they will write you up as psychotic, schizophrenic, or whatever. If you move forward and look at a documentary called Deliver Us from Evil, this came out in about 2004, Paul McHugh, head of the psychiatric chair, he was head of the psychiatric department of Johns Hopkins, would go and help the Vatican at the time with Cardinal Ratzinger under Pope John Paul II minimize the sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. There is a new movie that's supposed to be coming out. It's called Spotlight. And it chronicles the history, probably looser than not, of some of the sexual abuse of the Catholic Church and what was going on, which was that not only did they know about the Catholic Church abuse of children, but that the families and the children were threatened by people within the community of never speaking about it. It also talks about how attorneys developed their own cottage industry to protect the rapist who, again, if you naturally move forward in the progression, become human traffickers because there is no one holding them accountable. Now, please know, if you have internet, go to your internet and in your city or the largest city near you, type in attorneys for rape victims. What you will see is a very long list of attorneys that protect rapists. There is virtually no place in America you can find attorneys, with rare exception, to help the victims who are human trafficking. Because I can assure you that if you look in your cities at women who are in the strip joints, a lot of those victims have most likely been sexually abused. Because it breaks down the human being. Here are some other things that happened when you have children. And again, please do not become... I know this is a very difficult subject, but it is also an issue of when a person is being broken down, and I was regularly tested, even in the military, after I was repeatedly brutalized, as were many of my peers. I'm not even allowed to get in contact with my peers because they're keeping us all separated across this country. And yet I know that a lot of the women and or men, children who were abused, my records have been totally falsified throughout the VA. I've even let the leadership know that they've been falsified at the Cleveland office of Ohio. They don't care. They know exactly what they're doing. They want this to be kept very quiet because, again, when a child begins to be broken down as a child, and again, bullies in your schools, those are not just happenstance, folks. Those are allowed to happen. They're not just children who are the bullies. They're teachers. There are superintendents. There are counselors who are all manipulating your children. When a child has been abused, and they can, when a parent invites anybody into your family, whether or not it's a minister, a local kid or something else, when your child, before they begin to understand the way the world works, they believe that anybody you invite into your house has the same weight of truth and honesty as the parents, because you are introducing that child to these people. That is a very dangerous thing. Another thing that has maintained part of the problem is that, as I saw with Catholicism, in my community, the priests would often tell parents that if you teach your child their sexual organs, that it was a mortal sin, and that parents would be going to hell. Now, please hear what I'm going to say. There is a difference between your sexual organs and the act of sexual intimacy. Think of it this way. You do not stop telling your children about their toes, their foot, their ear, their eyes, their nose, their fingers. If they fall down and they cut their finger, they know how to describe it to you so that you can take care of them to make sure that they're not infected or harmed. When parents, and please know, this is not a criticism of your belief systems. This is that you may in your own communities have been lied to, so that if you do not teach your children their body organs, vagina, penis, rectum, those, breast, those are very important words for all little kids to know, the proper terminology. Because if someone oversteps appropriate boundaries, the child will never know how to explain it, yet they'll have the scarring and the marks and the hurt that is built upon to shatter them over and over and over again throughout their life. And quite honestly, yes, this is stuff that happened to me, so I'm speaking from first-person knowledge. And no, not all fathers are the bad guys. I had a priest from my parish. I had numerous teachers who were involved in various degrees of traumatizing me, and I had three different relatives. I can't even get FBI to even respond when I'm trying to report human traffickers in the area. They simply will not do anything because it goes so high. Now, here's another reason why it's very important, is because when a child is born, they're like a mirror. If you get a mirror and it is whole, without flaw, without cracks, as soon as anybody inappropriately begins to take advantage of a child, that begins to crack the child. Every time, and these people are very specific on how they do this. Again, those different people, the finders, the handlers, the conditioners, the groomers, and the re-traumatizers. They are all about building upon traumas. So as soon as a trauma happens, they will very quickly insult, tease, harm, and mess with a child. Some of the indicators that they could have been messed with is your child should have a 360-degree, perfectly balanced education. They should be good in mathematics. They should be good in their spelling and all those other skill sets. If, now please know it's not just looking at one area, but it's looking in combination of many areas that you need to look at this. So again, I'm not trying to get anybody to react and to become overly panicked. It is very important to begin looking at this and begin systematically looking through this.
Dorothy?
Yes.
I wish our show hadn't started so late tonight. We do have another guest that has been on with us all along that we had committed to the last hour for, and I let you run 15 minutes over that hour because I wanted you to finish that thought. I think you may be approaching a stopping point, but I'm going to give you another minute here to kind of wrap up on where you're at so that I can get Harry in here. I'd like for you to stay on with us because I think Harry may have some questions of you. I know Doug might. I'm going to give both of these guys live mics so that if they've got a question of you, they can ask it. But can you kind of bring us to a little bit of closure? I see this as just a first installment here at Walls in Our Minds. I know you and I have talked about doing a number of shows, and I really think we probably should have given the full 2 hours to this topic tonight, but we didn't. So I hope I'm not stopping you at a bad point, but I'm going to give you another minute to wrap up, if that's okay.
Yes. Let's say this is the first installment, and I do apologize because I dialed in probably about 20 times and couldn't get in. Here's
the
thought. For myself, and what I witnessed both as a small child and even as an adult through severe trauma and abuse in the military, my mathematical skills, my spelling skills were collapsed. My ability to articulate, and these are some of the reasons why these criminals do this, is because once they traumatize these victims and they keep breaking them down, and this is done even around parents, even around watchful adults, both the mathematical, the spelling skills, as well as even the ability. Now, I was an administrator, so a human resource director. There were times I had to be writing decorations or annual appraisals, and I couldn't remember basic words to write out these decorations. And so as I was writing them out, I would say to my staff, and there were people in my staff who were part of the criminal networks, quite a few, unfortunately, and they would laugh because they knew I had been drugged. So when people are looking at what's going on with Bill Cosby, folks, that is the exact same stuff that was happening throughout our military, and it has come into our society. And the reason why that's so important is because the drugs that were given had amnesiac qualities. Again, you also had people that you would go to, and they were re-traumatizing, threatening, and intimidating these victims. And because of the drugs and the way they re-traumatized the person over and over again, they could not find someone first to be able to bring this to their attention. This is now coming full bore throughout America, throughout our schools, throughout all of our societies, and in every industry that I've looked into. So with that, I will gladly listen to the next speaker, and thank you for your time and attention.
Dorothy, don't go anywhere yet. And again, I'm going to keep your mic open, so you're welcome to comment later. We do have a hand up from someone. Area code 310, if you have a brief question, I'm not going to allow a comment at this point, but if you have a brief question, please announce yourself. Area code 310.
Okay, this is Eric. I would like to ask your guest, toward the beginning, when you you read off a list of seven abuses of children, and I got all but one. I got number one, sexual; two, psychological; three, physical; four, technical; six, chemical; and seven, spiritual. I'm missing number five. Can you tell me what number five was, please?
Educational.
Oh, educational. I did hear you say that. Okay, and thank you for informing us about circular voting and circular reasoning, because that is very, very, very much fact. And the last thing I'm going to say is, as a musician, a professional musician, you're absolutely right that the beat is the main area where they can condition young minds. It's all in the rhythm, because if there was nothing else in music, there's always going to be rhythm, even if there's no melody or harmony. So I listened to every word, and I took notes, and I thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Eric. Doug, before I bring Harry on, do you have a question? I muted you a while ago because there was background noise.
Yeah, I apologize. That was somebody came in my bedroom here, and my question for you, Dorothy, as you know, I've been privileged to have you on my show many times over the years, and so I want to ask you specifically regarding Playboy magazine. I suspected for years, after studying CI Mind Control for the last 23 years full-time, exposing it, I want to please tell us what you think about Hugh Hefner, because I think he is one of the most evil people in the world.
Well, you know, I think sadly, if I'm not mistaken, and I looked it up in Wikipedia and a few other places, he was former military. And again, please know, not all military are involved in this. I certainly was not, I was subjected to it, but I certainly was not openly or fully consensual to it. And again, this is another reason why it's so important to distinguish the difference between full consent or whole consent. If you've been shattered, you can't give full consent because you're not wholly complete. I would sadly say that the objectivity of a human being, the sexualization of a human being, that is a very small part of who we are supposed to be. It is really more of the guttural side of yourself where you really cannot accomplish or achieve. And even though some people, and again, look at the issues of how much money that brings in versus how many of these people, even in the Miss America competitions, quite honestly, I would also be somewhat alarmed at that competition as well, because there were many women who were in college who were looking at getting their doctorate degrees or becoming doctors, lawyers, or various other. We have no idea where they're at. How many of them have been targeted, and where are their lives now? It is the objectification. It is the objectification of a human being in using them in such a small portion of their life, which is so deadly. And that's my concern with Mr. Hefner.
Thank you again for your patience tonight, Dorothy, and stay in with us if you care to.
I will.
I just so much appreciate your candor and your research and your articulation. You really bring forward a message in a very clear way, and I really enjoy the education that you provide. Harry Talbot, say hello, my friend from the Western Slope of Colorado, our entrepreneur and activist over in the Grand Junction area. Thank you for being patient with us tonight, man. We've had quite a situation getting in. We finally got everybody here. I'm just pleased everybody's with us. Harry, say hello.
Yeah, hello. Am I on?
You are on live.
Am I on?
You are on, Harry. Do you hear?
Okay, I'm good to go then, huh?
You're good to go.
Okay, press one.
You're on. Are you not hearing
okay.
me?
Okay. Yeah, I'm hearing you. Okay, well, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity, and I was getting a great education from Dorothy. I will say that I am aware of the Kathy O'Brien story, and I do have the book, and so I found, you know, more credibility in her story because of having been exposed to it, and also having talked to Doug Millar and had him as a guest in my home, and reading some of his papers and reading the book about the Nebraska issues and so on. So I'm very aware of that. I would like to take you off in a little different direction. I've been I work a lot with local government, and in fact, I had lunch with a congressman at noon, and I'm trying to get them to think about how to get this nation turned around. And I find a great deal of ignorance among the congressmen and legislators as to law, as to what a state should be, what state sovereignty should be, what kind of things were the design of our founders, and so on. And but I am aware of the fact that there are a lot of people in the United States, 320 million, let's say, and these people are controlled by a few thousand people. And I have been puzzling, you know, how do these people control, these few people control a lot of people. And of course, Dorothy's given a lot of the techniques in detail that they use, but most people are not aware of these. In fact, just before the meeting, radio program, I told some of my sons that Dorothy was going to be on, and they were incredulous. You know, they'd never heard of this stuff before, and I guess that's partly my fault. But I talk to young people and groups a lot, and what I try to do is get them to think of how they can reorient their lives so that they are not so subject and so victimized by the mind control stuff that goes on. And we're all mind controlled. And, you know, the enemy has, they decide that the best way to control people is to control their minds. That's the best way to put people in jail. And you don't have to have a lot of prisons if you can put people's minds in jail. And so I, you know, made some basic rules that I think might be helpful in getting people to change, the average person to change their lifestyle so that they can live much better and keep from being victimized by the very deceptive society we live in. And so one of the first things that I let me give you an example. This is a grassroots type thing. In the third world, and this is my argument for why this would work, Christianity is expanding at about 8% a year, and this expansion is due to it's apostolic Christianity, the Christianity that we know. I'm going to use the word is barnacle encrusted. It's institutionalized. We have 501c3 and churches that are also incorporated, and they can't do much, and they sit around making committees and boards of this kind and that, and putting on parties and social events and so on, and they don't spread Christianity very well, in spite of the fact that there's a lot of media effort in doing that. The apostolic Christianity, which is like the old New Testament Christianity, is growing at about 127,000 a day. Islam is growing at about 2% a year. Protestants at about a little less than 2, and the other guys are way down. And I think the Jewish community is actually shrinking. And so I use this as an example that if we're going to change the United States, we have a lot of people in the United States and always will have who are basically the low information people. I call them the ignorati. And so how would you convince these people who really want the country to change and want the country to go in the right direction but feel frustrated? In fact, they are frustrated by a lot of things. For example, they are frustrated by the fact that they are becoming powerless. You know, they've donated to causes, they've voted, they've joined organizations, they've written congressmen, they've gone to town hall meetings, they've served on boards and committees and done all the other things that a good citizen should do, and yet feel concern for their families and so on, that they are not having an effect or an impact. So my key word is efficacy. You know, how do you become effective in changing the society? So I came up with some stuff that may seem simplistic, but I think if it were done by enough people, it would actually make a change in the society. And so I wrote an article called Starving the Beast, and I wrote, you know, how these people control us, and Dorothy has convinced us very strongly that this mind control, not only among people like her, but the average citizen that just goes to school and listens to TV and so on, is enormously powerful and complicated and deceptive. And so we all become mind control slaves. And so I said, you know, the monster, it seems like, has all the cards, and we the citizens have none. So I say, well, what can the average citizen do when they get up in the morning? And the first thing I do is get up and say it's good to be king. You know, I'm going by Badnarik's book, It's Good to Be King, and that puts in my mind that I'm a sovereign citizen, not a slave, and not somebody's minion. And so I said, well, let's starve the beast, and we can do it in several ways. And one of the things that we can do is and this is particularly true in our homes, I'm thinking of a home setting, is cancel your cable or satellite and use, you know, have good books in your home and very much limit bad media. Now, we have the problem now of these electronic phones that are, you know, that are almost like little computers, and they're actually mind control. I see people running around, you know, and somebody may want to elaborate on that. It's just almost like these are addictive. These are electronic addiction, and that could be a whole program on, you know, what these phones are. But I think they give a kid a substitute reality. It's a virtual reality, and it cancels out their normal development of their brain in relationship to what goes on them. And then one of the things I said is you starve people who move jobs overseas by buying mostly things made in America by Americans. And Roger Simmermaker is a person that wrote How Americans Can Buy American. And he has lists and a website, and it tells you companies that make things in America and use Americans. And he said that it takes 90,000 commercial vessels crossing the oceans to take stuff from country to country. And he said they are responsible for more carbon dioxide than 29 industrial nations combined. These vessels emit more sulfur dioxide than all the Earth's cars, trucks, and buses, and are responsible for 1/6 of the atmosphere's nitrogen oxide. Well, nobody, you know, is gonna control the ships that go across the sea, but we control our coal mines and our mines and our farms, you know, to a ridiculous degree. And I think it's very important for parents to teach their kids skeptical thinking, that they be contrarians, which is what I am. And then I think it's important for us to strengthen our body and wallet by growing part of our own food and have a good size garden or partner with others in gardening and store food and so on, because, you know, we're coming to a place maybe even this month that our food supplies may be disrupted. And our family has put a lot of effort into preparing for this sort of thing. And one of the things that I didn't used to think I would ever say, but is starve the military. The beast needs American troops in many countries. In fact, we have troops in 120 countries, and we have 1,400 military installations around the world. And a lot of Americans get killed thinking that they are defending this country when they really are defending, they are fighting a war of resource acquisition or a war of control of some part of the world or something. And maybe we're defending the opium poppies in Afghanistan, because if you look on the website, you can find that the opium has increased by about sevenfold, I think, the last I looked at it, since we went in there. The Taliban almost had it wiped out. And, you know, we don't need to send Americans all over the world to defend this country, and that's been one of the big lies that has been given to us. The Swiss are armed to the teeth with real home defense, and every male in Switzerland has a gun and a military weapon and is trained to use it and must keep it in ready condition with plenty of ammunition. And General Smedley Butler, the former commander of the Marine Corps, said the only thing, two things worth defending are the Bill of Rights and our borders. And then, of course, reconnect with your faith and make certain that you teach that faith to your children in the home. Put on the full armor of God. Daily seek guidance from the Holy Spirit, which is what I do. Let your children see you practicing your faith and teach them to practice their faith. The problem with American faith is that American Christians are often can be said to be force-fed. They are not self-fed. And these Christians in the apostolic Christians in the third world are self-fed. They don't have seminary-trained ministers. They don't have formal churches. They don't build big buildings like our people do. That just loads you down. That's barnacles on the ship. And so I'm really thinking that maybe churches should put out satellite churches and really start getting Christianity in practice. And one of the things, and this relates to it reminds me of something Dorothy said. Machiavelli, and you probably know who he is. He was, like, I think he lived in the 1400s in Italy, and he wrote The Prince. And he said, without the fear of God, no state can last long. For the dread of eternal damnation keeps men in line and causes them to honor their promises and inspires them to risk their lives for the common good. How can those who scorn God revere men? And I believe in a kind of a general way that the loss of the fear of God and eternal damnation has been a big factor in the growth of evil in the society, which, as Dorothy said, is pervasive. And this is kind of, it's put kind of simplistically, but don't allow the state to bully you. It will take courage, but you can spend part of your education learning about the U.S. Constitution, your state constitution, and learn your rights under the law. And you might start learning about courtrooms that have gold fringe flags and UCC code laws, which preclude you from having constitutional rights when you go into that court unless you know what you're doing. And I think it's very important to associate with people that are bold, that are taking a bold stand, but it has to be an intelligent stand as well.
And you know, I've been kind of a student of this judge in Alaska, Anna Von Reitz, and you know, she seems very knowledgeable, and I've learned a lot from her. I have a friend, Marilyn Barnwall, that some of you know, and she's an expert on banking, and we've learned a lot about banking and state sovereignty and stuff from her. And then you can get out of debt, you know, pay your bills and with cash, you know, use the Dave Ramsey system. The banking system is debt-based, and, you know, that could take all day to talk about that, but it's an evil system, and it's not an American constitutional system, and it has tremendous power because of its ability to make fiat or colorable money, and then it drives a lot of the corruption, because the money can be generated and used to corrupt congressmen, you know, by both bribing them and threatening them. And I think most congressmen, to one degree or another, are probably bribed or threatened. And even in our local county here, we have, you know, we have our little oligarchy and this sort of thing, and we have to operate in that climate. The Dave Ramsey system will show you how to live debt-free, and you can just look Dave Ramsey up on the internet. He's a wonderful Christian guy, and he's helped a lot of people. Be very careful what you read. Most popular magazines are lacking in content and loaded with disinformation. They're part of the system of brainwashing. I call them chewing gum for the mind. And, you know, you can look at a whole rack of magazines, let's say at Barnes & Noble, and it's just simplistic stuff written to pander to the senses and everything. And be very cautious about how you use electronic communication. It's being increasingly monitored. I have a friend, Jeff Wright, that was one of the guys that actually put together the NSA spy system, and he quit them when he found out they were using it on Americans. And so some of the guys, like the WikiLeaks guy Assange and Snowden, are heroes of mine. In fact, the Germans made statutes of honor to Snowden and Assange, and I think Manning, Private Manning. So I think that's kind of interesting. I do think that the internet gives us a tremendous tool to go there and to start to find out truth, and I talk to people every day about places they can go on the internet and find out what's really happening in our world. And I put don't assume guilt for anything that was done by your race or ancestors to any group in past history. You are not responsible for what they did. Some of the old Talbots sold slaves in New Orleans, and I've got a slave bill. And so, you know, but that's interesting history to me. But I'm not going to compensate for what they did. And that's just neurotic and sick in order to do that. And don't get involved, your kids, in drugs or pornography. And I know this is a tough one. Proceeds from these two consist of the major sources of evil in the world, and together they cause almost untold human misery. And depriving the beast of illegal drug revenues will greatly weaken it. And I put work hard to keep your family strong. Good families are much less dependent on the government, and the government actually fears good, strong Christian families that are principle-centered. Study and be familiar with your U.S. and state constitutions. For example, our state constitution, I consider it my constitution. And it tells me that if one of my elected officials does not file their oath of office, I can prosecute him for a RICO statutes, for impersonating, let's say, a judge or a sheriff or something like that. And I have a friend that's actually got several judges thrown out of office by using the Colorado Constitution. And Colorado Constitutions have an equivalent of a Second Amendment, too. And the Colorado Constitution says that every male between 18 and 45 is a member of the Colorado Militia. How often have you ever heard of that, you know? And I'm saying that you must become a true self-reliant citizen. You've got to be really tough. And according to Jeff Wright, who is the guy that wrote the Citizen's Last Stand, he says that the restoration of the republic is utterly dependent on individual citizens reasserting their power as sovereign beings. We must return to the foundation principles that self-governing individuals and families are the essential building blocks for a just and equitable society. And if we don't do this, we're going to end up being run forever by the sociopaths and psychopaths that have run the world for centuries. And just as a side note, I have a theory that people who are sociopaths rise to power because they're willing to do evil things and use people that an ethical and honorable person would not do. And so those are some of my main thoughts, except that I do want to talk about another thing here. I think it's very important for people to learn to know who their enemies are. And I think that there need to have drills with your kids. You know, is this person an enemy? Is your doctor your friend or your enemy? Is your congressman your friend or your enemy? Is your pastor or priest your friend and your enemy? And get very clear in their minds that just because that person is in a position of authority doesn't mean that he is your friend or looking out for you. And so, you know, if some of you want to make some comments or ask questions, I'd be happy to deal with that.
Well, you have a hand up. You want me to let him come in? Because I know who it is. He's a good one.
Yeah, good. Well, going to make it easy.
Vaughn will make it easy on you. Vaughn, you have a live mic. You have a question for actually either one of our guests, but probably for Harry, right?
Well, I have a comment that may tie the two of them together a little bit, and it has to do with the question that Doug had for Dorothy. There's a book I'd like to recommend called Soft Porn Plays Hardball by Judith Wiseman. And it explains how Hugh Hefner and Alfred Kinsey took the Victorian culture that we had in the 1940s and intentionally corrupted it to transform it into the hedonistic society that we have now.
Okay, well, thank you. Is that available on Amazon?
I don't know. I ordered it by mail order. And so, yeah, Amazon would probably be a good place to look for it.
Yeah. Okay. One book I have on a different subject, but it's called The UCC Connection, How to Free Yourself from Legal Tyranny, and it's put out by the National Liberty Alliance. And they're talking about how you keep from getting sucked into some of these traps that they suck you in court and so on. And how to keep from being illegally charged, you know, with things. It's a very good book. It's on Amazon, and I think there's a guy named Freeman is one of the major guys. And one of the things I learned is that everything I sign that involves money, I stamp it with a stamp that says without prejudice, UCC 1-308, and that means basically that I do not agree by signing this to adhere to any contract that was not, or agreement, or anything that was done that was not fully disclosed to me. And that is the, you know, every law has remedy and recourse, and that is a remedy and recourse in the UCC code. And if you don't put that stamp under your signature on things, then you get, that's the only thing that protects you from being controlled by thousands of rules that you never heard of, and you're in agreement that you'll follow those and adhere to them if you don't use this stamp.
Well, you don't want to get me started on the National Liberty Alliance, so I'll just shift gears away from that one right now before I say something I just assumed not say tonight.
Are you thinking, though, that they are not credible?
I know they're not, and I believe that the leadership there are definitely include some, not all, but some of them include enemies within. So I'll just
okay,
I'll leave it there.
Yeah, and sometime I want to talk to you with you about what you think the remedy is, okay?
Okay, well, remedies are we talked a lot about remedies on this show, and I could do three or four shows on remedies here, but
yeah, well,
you
know, sometimes I just other than the show maybe even. Go ahead.
Absolutely. You mentioned before about living in apartments, and it was difficult for people to be autonomous living in apartments.
Yeah.
And I brought up the issue of, I don't think this is by accident. You know, you mentioned the word hurting, and I think that's exactly what they're doing to us. They're hurting us in many different ways, but one of the ways is to try to push people into crowded urban environments to get them off of the land.
Yeah.
Yes. Indeed. You also talked about raping resources and the use of the military actually to rape resources worldwide. I thought that was an important point. Reconnecting with your faith, starting within your home, because you cannot rely upon organized religious groups to help reconnect that faith. As a matter of fact, most of them are distracting and teaching things that are not scriptural and certainly, supporting of some of the Jesuit propaganda that's out there that's been infiltrated into all of the evangelical Christian seminars. You know, the reconnecting of the faith is certainly a key to all solutions. It doesn't matter what solution you're looking at, reconnecting your faith, and more importantly, I should say, reconnecting your relationship with the Creator. That's really critical because you're going to be distracted from that in many, many ways. You want to elaborate on
doing
that?
Doing the self-feeding instead of going through an institution. See, for example, when I read my Bible, you know, I read a lot about angels and I read a lot about demons, and the Bible tells me that killing babies in the womb is evil, and homosexuality is evil, and these kind of things, and you do not hear this from the church. It's just almost like it's not there anymore. And so these people, it's like, honey, I shrunk the gospel. And I wanted to give you kind of an interesting side note on this thing. So I'm pretty disgusted with it, as you can tell. This guy took his Bible and he found out that there were 330 places in the Bible where people who were non-believers were called sinners. And then he found out that there were 240 places in the Bible where believers were called saints. He found no places in the Bible where people who are believers are called sinners. Interesting, huh? And so then he says, how many churches have you gone to where they tried to fill you with guilt and about being a sinner when you were saved and on Christ's side? And you know, the answer is way too many. So I thought that was kind of an interesting
We all know that Paul wrote that we all fall short of the glory of God. So
that is
there's
correct.
No question that we're all sinners, and in fact, Yahshua came for the sinners. So from that perspective, we are. But see, the problem is that this guilt trip you're talking about is really of Satan.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page on that.
he wants people to think that they have to meet certain standards to feel good about themselves. He wants people to think they have to meet their approval of certain people to feel good about themselves. He wants them to feel bad and to think that they deserve punishment. And he also wants them to think that they're hopeless and cannot change. Those are the four great things that every one of us deal with. And I'd like to, Dorothy, are you still there? I got you still with a live mic. Are you still?
Yes, I am.
I'd like to bring Dorothy back in on this because in my conversations with Dorothy and with David Schurter looking at the testimony of the gal Savali and some of these others, when it comes down to trying to remerge these disassociated personalities where, Dorothy used the word shattered before. I think she was probably referring to the fact that the personality is no longer whole, that it is shattered, it's disassociated. And the one thing that I've listened to is after forgiveness, that if they couldn't forgive themselves, if they didn't have reconnection with their level of faith and the relationship, they probably would never be able to remerge these disassociated personalities without destroying themselves. Dorothy, would you address that for a second?
Well, yes, and I think, we could probably have a really great discussion on another show, which I'm opening this up with your permission, with Harry, in the fact that with the dangers of technology, such as Jose Delgado's neurochips, Operation Bluebeam, and others, these are overlaying types of technology, including audio spotlight, which do and are interfering with a human being's natural development into their true wholeness. Instead, what they're doing through these different traumas are shattering the person, making them vulnerable, and then through all these overlapping systems of propaganda, abuse, misinformation, disinformation, the shattering of the families, they are causing the person to not have not only a true relationship with themselves, but a psychologically appropriate, fully developed relationship with a healthy family and healthy community.
Yeah.
And one of the things, if I may, that I believe, and Harry, you let me know if you think, one of the things I would suggest, because again, I called my university and was sharing with them about the violation of my Title IX rights in what happened to me, which I did not have time to share with this show, and said, I would like to be able to help you to assure that no other students will go through what I ended up going through. They called the police on me.
Yeah.
Even though I had called the
police. You threatened them, didn't you?
No, I did not threaten them.
No, they perceived it as a threat.
Oh, of course, even though I made it very clear I was not in an agitated state.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I even shared with them that 2.5 years prior, not only had I called the university president's office, but also the campus police and shared with them bits and pieces of this, but they called the local police on me. The police showed up when I was talking to the Diocese of Cleveland, Ohio, in the things that the local Catholic church and school that I'd gone to had done. And when the police showed up, they asked, are you suicidal or homicidal? I said, absolutely not. I was waiting for the Title IX officer from my university to call so I could talk to them about what I went through. And the police officer only took my name, my information, and I said, why are you here? And as they were walking away, and I said, oh, I see what's going on. They're trying to protect their back ends from what they did. Because my university was involved in setting me up for this stuff.
Dorothy, we're out of time. I want to give 30 seconds to Harry for a final comment.
Well, thank you, everybody. And I just want to say it's been a privilege to be on this show and share ideas. And I think by all working together and sharing our different viewpoints, we can come up with a strategy that will help us get our country back. But I know a lot of things that won't work, you know, that normally people are urged to do, write their congressmen and so on. So
Harry, I want to invite you and Dorothy back in 2 weeks. If you're both available, I'd like to get you both back on here because I think we could further this discussion. We are totally out of time. Thank you so much. Great show.
Well, thank you.
We'll see you all next week with Walls in Our Minds.
Okay. Bye-bye.
John.